Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, what is up, and welcome to WWE Rivalries on this last Friday of September as we are fast approaching the fall season, if we're not already there. I always get mixed up when the calendar turns to fall. I guess we're technically fall, usually the 21st of September. Next thing you know, we'll be in winter, and me living up here in Canada, the winter is always a disaster, so yeah, that is not something I'm looking forward to. But then again, in this whole pandemic era, it's not like we can do a whole lot anyway. Well, I'm really looking to get into the show today as we are going to cover what is, in my mind, the catapult rivalry that shot Randy Orton into the main event scene as a true main event single star with his rivalry with Mick Foley. And if you guys don't remember that, Randy Orton versus Mick Foley, in my mind, is one of the most underrated feuds and rivalries of the Ruthless Aggression era. And it lasted just about 6 months, from late 2003 into early 2004. They were both involved in a 3-on-2 handicap match at WrestleMania 20 that we'll get into, and that culminated in a brutal street fight at the following pay-per-view at Backlash. So I can't wait to get into that, but as I do every week, I just want to touch on a bit of the current product. And look, we'll start with the good things because I have some negative things to get off my chest. But we'll start with the good things. SmackDown, really, really liking it. I gotta say, this is the best SmackDown has been since probably late 2016 when they first rebirthed the brand split, when they had Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles feuding over the WWE Championship, The Miz and Dolph Ziggler feuding over the Intercontinental Championship, when it was SmackDown Live. I really liked SmackDown back then, but right now, I gotta say, Roman Reigns, A1, his facial expressions, he knows how to play a heel. Matt was right all this time. That guy is tailor-made to be a heel. I didn't think I was going to like the booking with Jey Uso, but to date, I think it is really smart what they're doing. It is the perfect guy to go up against Roman Reigns as he transitions into a full-fledged heel. And even the upper to mid-card guys on SmackDown, they are stacked right now. Like, you kind of have Baron Corbin and Sheamus, who I like both those guys, especially Sheamus. I think the WWE could push both of those two, again, especially Sheamus, in main event programs. But right now, just as upper mid-card guys to challenge Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, I really like that. The Intercontinental Championship scene, like, my God, what could you ask more from a mid-card championship program than what's going on right now? My Montreal native brother, Sami Zayn, doing an excellent job in his return. Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles. And then you even have the tag team division on SmackDown. And I know I said last week that I think that they should shift the tag team division and the tag team championship exclusively onto the SmackDown brand because of the lack of depth throughout the entire roster, specifically on Raw. But at least on SmackDown, it's respectable. I love Cesaro and Nakamura. And then you have The Miz and Morrison and Heavy Machinery. Although I'm not the craziest fan of that booking right now. But it's not the end of the world what's going on with Otis and his Money in the Bank briefcase. Obviously, the Bayley and Sasha thing. So look, SmackDown right now, A+ across the board. I love it. I look forward to it. Raw, not so much. I think they got some of the heat back with Randy Orton to kind of piggyback off of what Matt said on his Raw review. But aside from that, I've been very disinterested on Raw. The thing I think I've enjoyed the most so far is the Women's Tag Team Championships. I really like Sasha, not Sasha Banks, Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax's tag team champions. I don't know why. I just like the pairing. I know it's probably not the most popular tag team of all time, but for whatever reason, I like it. I like the Riot Squad back together. So for me, that is a very, I would say, under the radar type of positive going on Raw right now. Another thing I like, the Hurt Business. I've been beating that drum for quite a while now. I don't really know what WWE is doing with them, if they're pushing them as baby faces or heels, because obviously they're a heel faction, but then they've taken it upon themselves to go head on with Retribution, who I would assume is a heel faction based on what they've been doing, running rampant over WWE, destroying everything in their path. So I'm not really sure why they're pitting a heel faction against another heel faction. But again, by and large, really like the Hurt Business. Retribution, I pretty much echo all the same points that Matt does, so I won't get too much into that. Raw Underground, meh. I don't hate it. I don't love it. I hope that it's heading towards something bigger. But for the time being, I'm all right with it. I don't like that Braun Strowman's on it because he's a SmackDown guy. And I detest when they break the rules of the brand split. I don't want to hear about this stupidity. Quarterly Invitational. What was the other term they had? Wild card rule. I hate it. When you break the rules of the brand split, it completely defeats the purpose of it and devalues what the main goal is between it. But again, aside from that, I guess I'll let it slide. Raw Underground has been okay. WWE Championship picture, already touched on that kind of. I like it. I'm still intrigued. I'm happy that they got Randy Orton to get some heat back. I still feel like Keith Lee has no business in this program right now. He could be up against guys like the Hurt Business or Seth Rollins. And speaking of Seth Rollins, here's where it gets very ugly for me. Okay, I'm going to try and compose myself because it is a PG show and I'm not typically a guy to go on a rant. But the Mysterio family is probably the worst bit of programming, talent, acting, performing, however you want to phrase it, that I've seen in so long. It is absolute garbage what they are doing with the Mysterio family. And it has so many layers of stupidity and garbage and just absolute crap. And I've had it with this entire thing. Look, I think that the WWE fan base or universe, however you want to phrase it, has had it with Rey Mysterio since the 2014 Royal Rumble, when they were expecting Daniel Bryan to come in number 30. And he came running out and they booed him out of the building. And I know it wasn't a shot at Rey Mysterio and it was mostly at the WWE creative. But personally, and I can speak for myself and I think for a lot of fans, I don't think Rey Mysterio has ever fully recovered and gotten the same pop since that night. And since he got thrown out of that Royal Rumble and cheered. And look, again, I know he was kind of just used as almost like a sacrificial lamb at the hands of the WWE indirectly and fed to the fan base and he got unwarranted heat. But since then, I for one, and I think a lot of people have been fed up with him. He came back in what, 2018, I believe, at the Royal Rumble again. Fine, I don't care. I'm a nostalgic guy. To come in to have, you know, a mid-card feud here and there, put on great matches, which he still does. There's no denying that. But I draw the line when he takes up multiple segments, his family takes up multiple segments, and he's taking up the time of one of the best wrestlers WWE has right now in Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins is on the best run of his career, and that's saying something, because he had the time in the Shield, which was great, his original heel run as part of the Authority, which was great, and his babyface run, which wasn't my favorite, but by and large was great. He basically took over the hearts of the fan base from early to mid 2018 to late 2019. So well over a year, Seth Rollins was pretty much the face and top baby face of WWE. And in saying all that, I still think the Monday Night Messiah is the best work that Seth Rollins has done to date in WWE. And it has been wasted for what? Going on 6 months now with this garbage Rey Mysterio crap. Dominic Mysterio Power Ranger looking crap. The wife of, I don't even know her name, Mrs. Mysterio, just coming out and looking like a zombie. She looks confused where she is. And then the 19-year-old daughter, Alicia, like, look, I'm trying not to get too angry here. But first of all, who the hell is Rey Mysterio to get to bring his entire family onto Raw every single week? Stone Cold Steve Austin never brought his family onto Monday Night Raw every single week. The Rock never did. Shawn Michaels never did. All these other greats who are worlds better and have always been than Rey Mysterio never brought their damn family onto WWE programming. But Rey Mysterio does? Why are they there? Why are they the only family that's always there? What purpose does his wife, who looks confused and disinterested and doesn't know how to act for anything, standing beside the ring? Why is his 19-year-old daughter standing beside the ring? Who are they? Are they on the same level of the McMahons all of a sudden? And I'm talking about it both from storyline perspective and real life perspective. If I was another performer or wrestler, I would be pissed off. Why does this guy get his entire family on television all the time? And I know you could say, well, he's a nostalgic act. Oh, he's this, he's that. Okay, Big Show's a nostalgic act. He comes back from time to time. Kane does. Back in the day, when Shawn Michaels came back out of retirement from his run from 02 to 09 or 2010, those guys never trotted out their entire family. And here's another thing. Why is Dominic Mysterio exempt from NXT? Could I know that? Why is Dominic Mysterio, who dresses look like a Power Ranger and looks 170 pounds soaking wet, and you know what, albeit he's good in the ring, better than I would have expected, but as we all know, there's much more to becoming a legitimate wrestler and WWE character than being good in the ring. We've seen it so many times. Apollo Crews. Is there anyone better in the ring than him? Better worker than him? But no, he doesn't have it, at least character-wise in my mind. It happens all the time. So Simona Johnson, or whatever her name is, The Rock's daughter, the arguably one of the greatest of all times daughter, has to go through the NXT process, but Dominic Mysterio doesn't. And you know what? I could live with this Dominic Mysterio garbage if it was a one-time thing with Seth Rollins and he got his ass beat, stomped on, and then he went away and then went through the developmental system. But no, no, no. It's not just a one-and-done realistic angle where he tries to avenge his father, loses to one of the best WWE has to offer right now, and then goes into development like everybody else. No, this guy goes toe-to-toe with Seth Rollins in every single match, gets rematch upon rematch, losing all of them, thank God. And then upon all else, after all that, he gets put into a number one contenders match for the tag team championships. What did Dominic Mysterio do to earn that right? Could I know? Could I know what he did to earn a right to be put into that match? It is absolute garbage. The acting of the entire Mysterio family is garbage. Rey Mysterio, he was never in my mind one of my favorites. I never found him a great promo. He was a bit too pandering to me, but I always respected the guy and I never hated him. I hate him now. I think he is my least favorite WWE superstar right now. I cannot stand Rey Mysterio. And another thing is, why does he have to speak Spanish all the time? Could I know? And it's nothing to do with the Spanish culture, the Spanish language at all. But as a WWE fan, you have kind of been conditioned that every time someone speaks a language other than English, you're trained to boo. Look, I'm from Quebec. I speak French. But when La Resistance were full-blown tag team heels and they would come out and start speaking in French, it was taboo. The same thing with Ivan Volkov speaking Russian, or Jinder Mahal speaking his mother tongue, Muhammad Hassan and Daivari speaking their mother tongue. It's just habit. You know, Antonio Cesaro, the old Cesaro, when he first started, he would come out to the ring and speak in multiple different languages. Common denominator here, they were all heels. As a wrestling fan, traditionally, when someone comes out and speaks a language that 95% of the fan base doesn't understand, they are heels. Why does Rey Mysterio come out and start trash-talking Seth in a language that most of us don't understand? It doesn't make sense to me. It goes against the grain about wrestling tradition. And I'm not saying I'm not open-minded to anything else. And I'm sure if I didn't hate everything else about this storyline, I wouldn't care about it. But it's just everything, every traditional rule, everything we're accustomed to is accepted with this Rey Mysterio thing and this entire angle. And I think above all else, and I kind of already touched on it, is that Seth Rollins on this magnificent run, and now you're even starting to see like him and Murphy break down a bit. So they've kind of almost run its course with at least the inaugural version of the Monday Night Messiah. And he's been wrapped up with Rey Mysterio. That's what we've wasted this on. On Rey Mysterio, who I thought he was done. I thought the Extreme Rules eye for an eye match, that was it. That's where it should have ended. He got his eye gouged out, for God's sakes. What more storytelling do we need for this garbage? If you wanted to make a one-time match where Dominic tries to come in to avenge his father, fine. But as soon as this passed SummerSlam, it has been complete garbage. And you know that this isn't going to be done in the near future, because now they've started this new wrinkle with Mysterio's daughter and Buddy Murphy, which I don't even want to touch on it because it's just so damn stupid. Like, I just have 0% interest in it. And now we have to deal with the Mysterio family drama like it's an episode of Maury Povich. Why do I care? Why do I care that Rey Mysterio called his daughter naive? Why do I care? And why is Seth Rollins, a former Universal WWE champion, one of the top heels and top workers in the business, wasting his time? And I'm not talking about the character here. I'm talking about, why is creative wasting away Seth Rollins on this utter garbage? It is garbage. Garbage. Mysterio family is garbage. Dominic looking like a Power Ranger is garbage. It's all garbage. I've had it. Move on. Please, 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 please move on from this angle. Nobody cares. I can guarantee you, and I'm sure, I think Matt has said this, they would be booing the hell out of the Mysterio family right now if there was a live audience. Move on to something, make something of what's left with the initial heat from the Monday Night Messiah. Because we're approaching a year now of the Monday Night Messiah, and aside from a nice feud with Kevin Owens, it has been all Rey Mysterio for Seth Rollins. Oh, he had a short, 3-week-long program with Drew McIntyre. Whoop-de-doo. Okay, I feel better, guys. I'm sorry. I had to get that off my chest. But now let's get into the reason why you guys are all here. Okay, so Mick Foley versus Randy Orton. So let's give you a bit of a backstory. This first started in early 2003 or mid 2003. So like I've said before, 2003 was a very transitional time for the WWE as a whole, specifically on Monday Night Raw, because post Rock and post Stone Cold Steve Austin, a lot of the old type of wrestlers kind of stuck onto SmackDown. A lot of the wrestlers that we were accustomed to in the Attitude Era. You had Eddie Guerrero on SmackDown, Chris Benoit on SmackDown, Big Show, Undertaker, Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar. Those guys were all SmackDown guys. Edge at this time was on SmackDown. Rey Mysterio, who I'm not going to get into another Rey Mysterio brand, Rey Mysterio was on SmackDown. So SmackDown was pretty loaded, especially with the middle card guys. But over on Raw, for all intents and purposes, it was kind of the Triple H slash Evolution show. You had just had Goldberg debut going over on The Rock at Backlash 2003. The mid card was made up of the likes of Chris Jericho, Booker T, Christian, Kane. So you still did have some recognizable faces over on Raw, but the star power and the upper mid card for me was better on SmackDown at this time. So Raw was going through a transition here where they were trying to build new stars. And what was one of the main ways that they went about it back then was through factions, aka Evolution. So Randy Orton and Batista had just come back from injury. And actually, I don't even think Batista was fully back from injury. I think at this point, Evolution was just Triple H, Ric Flair, and Randy Orton. And how the first interaction of Mick Foley and Randy Orton was an episode at Madison Square Garden in June 2003, where there was an altercation between Mick Foley and Ric Flair backstage. Randy Orton intervened, beat the holy hell out of Mick Foley, and then kicked him in the head down a flight of stairs. And you have to remember, at this time, Mick Foley was about 3.5 years removed from his last wrestling match. And that came at WrestleMania 2000 when he main evented it in the Fatal 4-Way match for the WWF Championship alongside The Rock, Triple H, and The Big Show. So it had been a while since we saw Mick Foley in an altercation like this. Like, yeah, he had come back to do some special refereeing here and there. He was the WWF commissioner for pretty much all of the year 2000. But by and large, we had not seen Mick Foley for quite some time. So to see him get involved in any way was quite a shock, to be honest. So about the whole year goes by, and the year of 2003 really was the year of Evolution. They really were the focal point of Raw. Batista eventually returned, and they were running roughshod. And at SummerSlam 2003 is when Randy Orton really got his first taste in a main event, as he was involved in the second ever Elimination Chamber match that main evented SummerSlam with Randy Orton, Shawn Michaels, Chris Jericho, Kevin Nash, Goldberg, and Triple H for the World Heavyweight Championship. And although WWE eventually built to anointing Randy Orton and John Cena and Batista as the faces of the future in early 2005, Randy Orton got there a whole lot quicker than the other two did. And you saw that in 2003 that he was one of the faces of the future, while the other two, it was left to be determined. You know, at this point, Batista wasn't even fully back. I think he only came back into, I believe he only showed back up from injury in late summer of 2003 or in the fall. John Cena was still a heel over on SmackDown, at this point feuding with The Undertaker. So it was really only clear-cut that, yep, Randy Orton is a guy that they're pushing, and it was later revealed that Triple H had taken him under his wing, both in kayfabe land and in real life as a member of Evolution. So Randy Orton is on this slow ascent on Monday Night Raw. Over the course of the fall of 2003, he gets more and more looks in as a main event player. He was the last man standing at the traditional 5-on-5 match at the 2003 version of Survivor Series for Team Bischoff, where Team Bischoff went toe-to-toe with Team Stone Cold Steve Austin. If you remember, those two were the co-GMs of Raw, and the winner of this match would become the full-time GM of Raw. And Team Bischoff, like I said, led by Randy Orton, was alongside Chris Jericho, Christian, Scott Steiner, and Mark Henry up against Team Stone Cold Steve Austin, led by Shawn Michaels, the Dudley Boys, Booker T, and Rob Van Dam. And this was a big deal for Randy Orton when he was the last man standing at the Survivor Series, because he kept this title for, I believe, the following 3 years, where the following year he had turned babyface and he was the last man standing again. Then in 2005, he was the last man standing one more time as he led Team SmackDown to a victory over Team Monday Night Raw. So 2003 was a real building block year for Randy Orton. And in the match, particularly at Survivor Series 2003, it came down to himself, Jericho, and Christian up against Shawn Michaels. And Shawn Michaels battled back, eliminated Jericho and Christian. And then finally, with the help from an interfering Batista, Randy Orton was able to get the pin on Shawn Michaels, scoring the victory for Team Bischoff. And it was almost kind of poetic because at the pay-per-view before, the Raw pay-per-view before Survivor Series, Randy Orton had actually defeated Shawn Michaels in a one-on-one match. So him getting the one-up on Shawn Michaels yet again was yet another building block and stepping stone into legitimizing Randy Orton as a, I guess at this point, just a mid-card heel, but really starting to get him legitimate heat. And hard heat, and it was just big time hatred for Randy Orton, who was really starting his Legend Killer gimmick, the inaugural version of it, in late 2003. And the following pay-per-view, Armageddon 2003, is when they really put the rocket ship on the back of Randy Orton. And how did they do that? He won his first ever singles championship, or I don't even believe he had won a tag team championship at this time. So his first ever championship, scoring the victory over Rob Van Dam for the Intercontinental Championship. So he wins the Intercontinental title, Batista and Flair win the tag team titles, Triple H regains the World Heavyweight title, and it's the night of shine for Evolution in late 2003. Now, this is when They bring Mick Foley back into the fold to really kickstart the angle between him and Randy Orton. And we've seen this numerous times before, that an up-and-coming guy goes toe-to-toe with the hardcore legend Mick Foley to legitimize himself. So how do we know this? Well, let's take a trip down memory lane. What was The Rock's first big-time program as a main event heel? Mick Foley. They traded the championship, what, 3 or 4 times in the winter of 1999 after The Rock turned heel at the Survivor Series and aligned himself with the corporation. They had the infamous last man standing match at Royal Rumble 1999, and this really got The Rock over as a true top heel. Fast forward a year after that, Triple H and Mick Foley. They had basically the same exact timeline as The Rock and Mick Foley in the winter of 2000. And they had a hardcore match at Royal Rumble 2000. And it ultimately culminated with Mick Foley getting into the championship match, as I previously mentioned, at the main event of WrestleMania 16. And then a year after the program with Randy Orton, or I guess it was actually 2 years after, like I touched on a few weeks ago, Mick Foley made Edge a main event guy. Mick Foley put Edge over as a true top heel. Going up against Mick Foley is almost like a litmus test for WWE to see if they really have a true top heel with an up-and-comer. And they did it here again with Randy Orton. The only difference is that they were testing Triple H, Rock, and Edge as true top heels. Randy Orton was still a mid-card guy here. He hadn't yet had like a legitimate one-on-one feud even as a mid-card guy. Like, yeah, he had the Intercontinental Championship rivalry with Rob Van Dam, and he had a couple of encounters with Shawn Michaels. But unlike Rock, who had had the Stone Cold Steve Austin already, or Triple H, who had gone toe-to-toe with The Rock, or Edge, who had gone toe-to-toe with Matt Hardy. You know, Randy Orton's first legitimate hatred of a feud was with Mick Foley, and that's why I think this is such an important program and rivalry to go back on. And how they really kicked off this rivalry is when Randy Orton beat Rob Van Dam for the Intercontinental Championship at Armageddon 2003, Mick Foley was the special guest referee. So Randy Orton got to rub it in Mick Foley's face, front row and center. And this started a couple week long build of Randy Orton spitting in Foley's face, disrespecting him, just really just taking it to Mick Foley, tormenting the guy. And like I said, Mick Foley was kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out, really wasn't a full-time competitor, and we hadn't seen him in a physical altercation type of in-ring competitive match in close to 4 years at this point. So the Royal Rumble rolls around, and Randy Orton enters his, I believe it was his first Royal Rumble. He enters number two against Chris Benoit, and he is on a really good run, and this was the Royal Rumble where Benoit entered number one and won it. And Randy Orton is in the ring. He's on a good run as well. And the Test's music hit. And Test's music is going, and you're waiting for him to come out. And no, nothing's happening. His music stops, and then it cuts to the back. And you see Test lying on the ground, and officials and referees trying to help him out. And Stone Cold Steve Austin emerges, who was the Raw sheriff at this time. And he starts screaming at someone, saying that you better get to the ring because you're taking his place. And that is when this happens.
Who the hell is Austin talking to?
I don't know.
Test has obviously been knocked out by someone, and whoever knocked Test out is going to be the 21st entrant, according to Sheriff Austin.
Arena Philadelphia is exploding at the Royal Rumble. Mick Foley's shocking. What the hell? I can't believe this.
Mick Foley obviously took out Taz. Mick Foley.
Yeah.
Foley eliminating Randy Orton and himself.
And himself. Eliminating himself.
Foley doesn't give a damn.
Why'd you eliminate yourself?
So as you heard, Mick Foley comes out, beats the hell out of Randy Orton, eliminates him and Randy Orton in the process, taking out himself, but I don't think his intent was really to come out and win the Royal Rumble. They brawl on the outside for about 5 more minutes after this. Randy Orton gets some shots in with a chair. They fight up the ramp. And this really sets the stage on the build to WrestleMania. On an episode of Raw in early February, Mick Foley seemingly has Randy Orton cornered in the backstage locker room area, but Batista and Ric Flair join the assault, and the three of them beat the holy hell out of Mick Foley. So they beat the hell out of him. He gets powerbombed through a table by Batista. 2 weeks later on Raw, Randy Orton gives Mick Foley a chance to answer the bell one-on-one in the ring.
Sure, you might have been the hardcore legend, but
Tonight, you're just Randy Orton's.
Oh, boy, how disrespectful. Here they go! And this one. Did the slush fest. That's all it is. And Orton on Henry Foley in the headmost right hand.
Hey, Foley should have listened. Orton is only 23 years old. He's not even in his prime yet.
And Nick Foley turned the table on.
Wait a minute.
Nick Foley. He is a hardcore legend. No mistake about that. The headbutt right to the temple.
Well, he was a hardcore legend in the year 2000. This is 2004 now. Look out. Oh, my God.
The handsome young 23-year-old was ate some canvas compliments of Mick Foley, who just served it up Foley style.
Foley is a can be a, those lesson-footed shots, a very deranged and dangerous man. There is a dark place in his heart that we've known about forever.
There's a DDT.
You're right, that Foley is deranged. He is dangerous. Maybe Ted broke it down, but he's still dangerous.
Foley is here.
Oh, look at this.
Look at this. There's Ric Flair. Uh-oh. And Ric Flair, the Foley, taking out Orton. Ric Flair, now Batista. And it's all a long blow. What a long blow by Orton. The damage done by Randy Orton, who just hunted Mick Foley below the belt.
Now, Foley,
it's all unsanctioned. It's not even going to be in the record book.
Look what you got yourself into now, Foley. Who's eating the canvas now, JR?
Nick Foley.
Yeah.
Disrespectful remarks continue. The punishment continues on Mick Foley by Randy Orton. And now,
look at Batista with a clean, free shot
on Mick Foley, who's literally getting the hell beat out.
How much more can any human being take?
Well, Foley's been beaten senseless.
He was senseless before he came out here. That's the only reason he came out here.
And when Blair and Batista hold of Foley, look at this. Completely shot by Randy Orton. Again, doing the damage to Mick Foley. Hard, stiff, right hands.
Man, you want to talk about getting nuclear heat? It is hard to match the type of nuclear heat Randy Orton was getting at this time, and probably only rivaled by the heat he is getting right now 16 years later. And it really makes you realize that when he is at his best and when he wants to, there is probably no better heel, arguably, in the history of WWE than Randy Orton. So as you just heard, he challenges Mick Foley into a seemingly one-on-one fist fight. Mick Foley gets the best of him until Ric Flair and Batista come out, make it a three-on-one assault. They beat the hell out of him, low blows, RKOs. They end that beatdown with a Shield-esque triple powerbomb that Batista executed. And, you know, it was just, this was really the coming out party for Randy Orton coming into his own. Because Batista at this time really did not speak a whole lot. He was just the meathead for Evolution. Ric Flair, everyone knew who Ric Flair was. He already had done what he had to do. But this program and around this time, it wasn't really centered around Ric Flair. He was almost just giving the rub to Randy Orton. And Triple H was, it was almost like Triple H had kind of branched off from Evolution for a bit at this point. Like, he was still the undisputed leader, but he was busy feuding with Shawn Michaels, and then Chris Benoit had just crossed over to Raw following his Royal Rumble win at 2004. So at this point, it was kind of like Randy Orton was the leader of Evolution, because the three members of Evolution were concerned with Mick Foley while Triple H was off in the main event picture. And when Triple H wasn't around, Randy Orton was kind of like the de facto leader, and you were seeing it on full display in this beatdown. And this is the kind of became the trend of this feud bleeding more and more towards WrestleMania 20, where Mick Foley would always just get ambushed by three members of Evolution and really could never find a way to get the one up on Randy Orton because of the numbers game. So the beatdown, it's two times in what, 3 weeks that he had taken this beatdown. And then Mick Foley eventually comes back to Monday Night Raw in early March. And I believe at this point you're 2 weeks out, 3 weeks out from WrestleMania. And Randy Orton comes out with all the members of Evolution, excluding Triple H, to confront Mick Foley and extend an offer to have a match with him at WrestleMania, a one-on-one match. But Mick Foley, already used to getting beaten down by all three men, declines his offer, knowing that it will never be a true one-on-one match, but extends a counter offer to the Legend Killer.
Oh, he falls out of the head. make something crystal clear to the three of you. You see, your days of beating and beating and beating and beating on Mick Foley, those days are over. Because you see, the three of you, you guys just didn't agree to any old 3-on-2 matchup. No. You've agreed to the most electrifying and biggest tag team matchup of all time. You've agreed to face the most electrifying tag team of all time, The Rock and Sock Connection. Oh my.
So as you heard, Mick Foley challenges them to a 3-on-2 handicap match, which Randy Orton, Batista, and Ric Flair agree to. And then while they think he came to Raw alone, The Rock comes running out to kind of even the odds. It's still a handicap match, so not fully even the odds. They clear the ring, hits the people's elbow following Mr. Socko, and then confirms to them that it will be The Rock and Sock Connection versus Mick Foley. Versus Evolution. And then the following week on Raw, The Rock does This Is Your Life segment for Mick Foley, kind of the reverse for what Mick Foley had done for him 4 or 5 years prior. Evolution comes into the ring, beats the hell out of The Rock and Sock Connection on the go-home episode of Monday Night Raw to WrestleMania 20. And I gotta say, this was a really, really fun match. It was kind of cool to see The Rock in a mid-card match, a tag team match at a WrestleMania. It's the only non-one-on-one match The Rock ever had at a WrestleMania. And this was a very star-studded WrestleMania card. This is, I would say, a top five, if not higher, WrestleMania of all time. Chris Benoit won the World Heavyweight Championship against Shawn Michaels and Triple H. The Undertaker came back as the Dead Man to beat Kane. You had Eddie Guerrero retaining the WWE Championship against Kurt Angle. John Cena won his first ever WWE Championship here, winning the U.S. title against Big Show, opening the WrestleMania card. So this was a very star-studded WrestleMania, and it really was on full display with this type of tag team match in the middle of the card. And Evolution ends up going over on the Rock and Sock Connection, and it was a really important win for Randy Orton and Batista. Not so much for Ric Flair, because like I said, he had already done what he had to do, but it was a very big win for Randy Orton and Batista, even, to go over on two legends like The Rock and Mick Foley at WrestleMania, the grandest stage of them all. And I would really go back to watch that match, because the interactions between The Rock and Ric Flair during that match were absolutely hilarious. Ric Flair mocking The Rock and doing his own variation of the people's elbow, doing his Ric Flair strut off both ropes. That is just classic comedy. I loved it. And the program doesn't stop there. Randy Orton gets the big win on The Rock and Sock Connection alongside his Evolution faction members. And it ultimately culminates in a no-holds-barred match at the following pay-per-view, Backlash 2004. And this time, it truly was a one-on-one match, with Randy Orton putting his Intercontinental Championship on the line against Mick Foley. And what do you know, this became, and still is considered, probably alongside Mick Foley's WrestleMania match against Edge at WrestleMania 22, one of the most gruesome matches in WWE history. And if you haven't watched it, I would strongly suggest that you go back and do so, because I gotta tell you, it was absolutely brutal. There were thumbtacks, barbed wire. I remember when Randy Orton first landed in the thumbtacks, when he went to hit an RKO and Mick Foley just kind of launched him onto the bed of thumbtacks. And his face, as his entire body and arms and hands and backside, legs were just covered. I remember the graphic of Mick Foley just grinding the barbed wire baseball bat and on Randy Orton's head, going off of the stage through tables. Absolutely gory, big time, tough match to watch if you have a weak stomach. But Randy Orton gets the win, and that closed the program and the rivalry between these two. And it was really off to the races for Randy Orton following this program, as he went on to win the World Heavyweight Championship against Chris Benoit at SummerSlam 2004, had the match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania 2005, and after this, Randy Orton really cemented himself as a main event player. And I think being able to go toe-to-toe with a guy like Mick Foley, the hardcore legend, in on the mic, in this match, like, I think the match that he had really showed that he had it, as a main event guy at Backlash, being able to take that kind of punishment. And you got to give credit to Mick Foley coming back to put him over, coming back to be in an in-ring competition, in-ring program for the first time in close to 4 years. And I think that this program as a whole did world to Randy Orton's career. And I don't know if he would have taken off had he not gotten the rub and being able to go over on a legitimate legend like Mick Foley in this fashion. And another thing is that being able to be in the to beat The Rock in his final match for the following, 7.5 years, that was a big claim to fame for Randy Orton. I know they didn't touch on it a lot, but that WrestleMania tag team match was The Rock's last match until Survivor Series 2011, when he tagged with John Cena against the True Miz, the Miz Truth, the Miz and R-Truth, whatever their tag team name was. But being able to say that and be that claim to fame that me alongside my tag team partners gave The Rock his final loss in his final match for 7 years, and for a while you really did think that was his final match, was a real big claim to fame for Randy Orton, who, like I said, with Triple H preoccupied with Chris Benoit and Shawn Michaels, almost became like the de facto light leader of Evolution. So you just got to look back on this program and really view it as a launching pad for Randy Orton. And again, what a job Mick Foley did for another up-and-coming rising star, like he had done for The Rock and Triple H before this, and what he would later do for Edge in 2006, much like he did for Randy Orton in 2004. So look, guys, I hope you guys enjoyed this latest episode of WWE Rivalries with Mick Foley and Randy Orton. We'll be back next week. Maybe I'll pull out one of the suggestions we've gotten. Maybe Kurt Angle and Eddie Guerrero. I'm thinking like that one is kind of overdue. Have yet to touch on Eddie Guerrero at all, so I think maybe that would be a good one. And also Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero, but we will be back next week with another great rivalry to recap. And if you guys have suggestions, as always, you can get me on Twitter at ADeMarco25, or you can email Matt at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. So guys, I hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend, and I'll talk to you next week.